Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Morosi. Where is Jeff Passan in all of this?
Here's John Morosi.
Where is Jeff Passan?
Should we just call Jeff Passan right now?
Yes, just call him.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
JP Morosi had it first. How you feeling, Padres fans?
MLB Network insider.
Domo, arigato, gozaimashita. Thank you so much. Three languages in one conversation, Ichiro. Thank you so much.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy. I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me means the world.
With Spiegel and Holmes.
Sources confirm that's fun.
On 670 The Score.
Man, I'm glad, considering being in Cooperstown and it being Hall of Fame weekend and there's all sorts of crazy news that's going on around MLB, that John Morosi, our friend, who has local ties, has time for us to talk with him, and we thank him for this. He's joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. John, thanks for joining us. How was this weekend in Cooperstown?
Amazing. And Lawrence and Speaks, greetings from my rest stop along the New York State Thruway. I am eventually headed towards New York City from Cooperstown, which, as you know, is not exactly a short trip. I'll be part of our MLB Network coverage of the trade deadline coming up later on this week. But my brain is still largely in Cooperstown after that weekend and that very fun conversation with Ichiro at the end, where I, of course, had studied a lot to figure out how I could thank him and say, we'll see you tomorrow in Japanese. And then, of course, he surprised me with de nada, mañana. And so I was ready for that. It was great. Ichiro was a lot of fun. His speech, one of the all-time best. I'm very lucky to have been at a number of inductions now, and I don't think I've ever heard a better one. Funny, poignant, taught us a lot. And really his sincerity came through. So I just thought that was a brilliant speech, a special weekend. I heard the last segment before we started the top of the hour, Lawrence, where you mentioned Dick Allen. And I was really honored that I could be there and actually meet. So Dick, of course, was one of three brothers who all played in MLB in the same 1972 season. Hank has since passed away. Dick, of course, passed away in 2020. But Ron is still with us, and he was there yesterday. So I had a chance to meet Ron Allen. Amazing. All five of the Allen brothers and the Allen family were all all-state basketball players in Wampum, Pennsylvania. Really one of the best athletic families ever in Pennsylvania, which is saying a lot. And I read the memoir that he wrote, that Dick Allen wrote, and really talked about how he wanted his career to be a celebration, but the racism that he faced early in his career really changed him a lot. And it wasn't until Chicago he really found himself, and then he had the homecoming to Philadelphia, and now all these years later, posthumously, he is elected to the Hall of Fame. So just a story that we all would have hoped would have been a happier ending, that he would have been able to celebrate it in person and be up there on the stage giving a beautiful speech. But I think it was important for Willa, his widow, and again, his son, Richard Allen Jr., who I spoke with as well, that they all know that their dad, that their husband has his rightful place in Cooperstown.
That's wonderful stuff. And JP Morosi, who is so steeped in baseball history, great perspective on that. Totally agree about Ichiro's speech, which I thought was phenomenal. Can you do anything about the fact that the Hall of Fame speeches go against a full Sunday slate of games? And it's just so difficult to carve out the time to live it and watch it. I think it's one of the most unfortunate decisions of the MLB calendar year. And why not on the Sunday night before the All-Star game when there's no other games? Why can't it happen then and they can move the draft? I know that's where they have the draft now. It'd be better to have focus on the Hall of Fame than the draft, in my opinion.
That is a great question. And I have given a lot of thought to this. There was, of course, the one year when it was in September due to COVID. And actually, I thought it was a beautiful time to have it in terms of the way the weather functioned. There are a couple things to keep in mind. It's important as a summer celebration and a homecoming for the Hall of Famers themselves, who all come back from Juan Marichal to last year's incoming class. And so Cooperstown, the village, loves that it's Hall of Fame weekend. And obviously, as we know, by definition, when it's a weekend and when it's in the afternoon of a weekend day, there's almost always going to be baseball going on. And it's difficult. I will say a number of teams that have significant trade deadline decisions to make, a number of their executives were still there over the weekend, which I think really says a lot about how important the Hall of Fame still is. I get it. There's no perfect time and place to do it, but I will say this. I peeked ahead, and in the Hall of Fame media notes, they actually print the future editions of when the future induction ceremonies are going to be. Interestingly, next year it's about when you would expect. It's basically this Sunday, 1 year from now. So our apologies on that. But for 2028, when the Olympics are in LA and the focus of our whole country is on the Olympics and hopefully Major League players in the baseball tournament there, the Hall of Fame weekend will actually be in August, early August, first half of August, and not in July. Hopefully that's the start of newer and more thought being put behind when exactly this happens. I do think the draft, we could see that move again in the next CBA too. So I would say, Matt, I identify and I empathize with your request. I will, in my many conversations with folks in Cooperstown, I'll say, hey, I talked to Spiegs, just relaying it from a friend. Here's what he'd like. And I'll say, what can we do about it? And if they say, listen, it's a little harder for Koufax to come back on this particular day than the other, I'll say, listen, who is the Hall of Fame for? Sandy Koufax or Spiegs? Let's make a decision here. And so we're gonna work on this and really try to find the best solution, Spiegs, for as many people.
They don't call him Abner Triple Day for nothing. I'll tell you that much right now. John Rosie joining us here on the Spiegel at Home show. We've been talking about the big news here in Chicago that Jed Hoyer has signed an extension. There's also crazy news going on in baseball. Catch the Spiegel at Home's listener up on this Bryce Harper commissioner thing.
Well, so that report came out from The Athletic earlier today that a meeting between Bryce Harper and Rob Manfred became contentious. And Rob, by the way, has been doing visits to every major league clubhouse. And a bit of a state of the game. It's a very important time, of course. The next CBA comes up after 2026. Of course, the WBC is next year. A lot of important things are going on writ large for the sport, Olympic participation, number of key issues. But obviously the economic ones are those that are getting a lot of attention. And Bryce Harper, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically he's, according to the reports, when the commissioner was talking about different issues, it's important to point out, at no point in time did it seem as though the words salary cap were mentioned directly, that there was no evidence, no reporting that he actually said that. But it seemed as though Bryce was sensing that there were some economic issues that were being discussed and rather stridently suggested the commissioner should excuse himself from the clubhouse because of the contentiousness of that particular issue. I understand why it's newsworthy. Obviously, you've got the commissioner and one of the most recognizable players in the sport, and we're still a year and a half away from this CBA expiring. There's a long time between now and then, a long time between now and opening day 2027, which is when it really matters. But it's certainly apparent that despite all of the good vibes that are going on in the sport, attendance is up. Large market teams are playing well. There's a lot of interest right now in the amount of media rights coming up. There's a lot of positives right now. Global growth of the game. We saw the Tokyo series. You lived it with the Cubs and the Dodgers. There's a lot of really good things going on. But the economic piece remains a potential stumbling block. And as Evan Drellick reported at The Athletic, the idea is that the commissioner wants to make sure the message is getting out there to, for lack of a better term, the broad membership of the union and not just the Bryce Harpers, who have obviously lifetime contracts that are in excess of $300 million. That's a very small group. I think that the MLB perspective going forward, if I can anticipate it a little bit, is that, look, there are ways that even if there is a salary cap, and I say if, I'm not sure there is going to be one, but if there is one, that if you raise the floor enough, it is going to do a lot of good for the players at the bottom level And even those that are out there and don't have a contract into February and even early March sometimes, that it becomes a more efficient way of signing. So that way there's maybe not quite the frenzy for Juan Soto, but that Juan Soto's 765 or so, maybe he only gets 720, let's say, and the other remaining $45 million end up going back into higher minimum salaries again if the same bucket is being spent on everybody. That's just one example. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be the case, but that's the idea. And I think that issue, as you can tell from Bryce's reaction, reportedly, is not going away. And the commissioner, I think he's done a good job of getting the message out to membership of guys, again, that are making $1 million, $2 million. For those guys, the bottom number means a lot more than Juan Soto's number. And I think that's the message that Rob Manfred is trying to get through.
I fear we're going to have lots of time and months to debate such things, at least fill in the context. Let's jump to now, John Paul Morosi. Who is the best starting pitcher who's going to get moved at the deadline?
Really good question. I actually think it's going to be a very busy week
Oh, no. Did the Cylons get John Morosi?
Yeah, they're trying. And they spend a lot of time in New York.
Because not a single starting pitcher is gone yet, Lawrence. And you've got guys from Hauser and Savali on the south side to Kelly and Gallen in Arizona to Mitch Keller in Pittsburgh. And then you get to the guys in Florida with Alcantara and Cabrera. But I'm not sure any of them right now are like, here's the ace that's going to make the difference. You know, Dylan Cease gets you excited about being the ace that might make the difference. Do we have John Paul back? John, you were saying it's going to be a busy week, you think, as the seal on starting pitchers has yet to be broken right now.
Correct. I think that the Cubs have had conversations with the Nationals about Mackenzie Gore. They've had conversations with the Pirates about Mitch Keller, Sandy Alcantara. That link with the Marlins has been out there since last winter time. When you are as good of a team as the Cubs are, and your farm system is as good as your farm system is, and your GM, president of baseball operations, just got a massive extension, that seems to me that it's probably a good time to make some moves. And for all those reasons, I will be mildly surprised if the Cubs do not add at least, and I say at least, one starting pitcher between now and 5 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. There's a good supply of arms out there. And again, those teams I mentioned, Nationals, Pirates, really stand out as being potential sellers, as are the Marlins. The Twins probably less likely. Joe Ryan's name has been out there. I'm not convinced that Joe Ryan is going to get moved. But those other teams I mentioned, I do think make a ton of sense and are potential fits. And the name that I think is much more likely, I would say this, for the Cubs, they will try their best to keep Owen Casey. I'm not sure if they can keep him while still getting someone that's controllable. But I do believe they would much rather move Alcantara than Casey if they can help it. And the one they really like, Wiggins, potential ace pitcher down the line, seems like they really want to keep him. But Triantos can be in play, Alcantara can be in play, and for the right controllable piece, Casey could be in play. But I do not see Casey being a guy for a Zach Gallen, for a Merrill Kelly, for a rental piece. The guy whose name I think we haven't talked about enough, broadly speaking, Edward Cabrera, Miami Marlins. Take a look at his highlights. He has, I think, one of the best arms in the game, period. And he has been a very popular name alongside Sandy Alcantara for the Miami Marlins.
It's funny that you bring that up, because we had some people bring that particular name up to us in our pre-show meeting today, John. So you saying it makes our spidery senses tingle a little bit, that maybe that's something that the Cubs might want to do. How concerned is Major League Baseball that some of the issues with gambling might be a little more widespread with this stuff going on with Emmanuel Class A?
Well, let's take a look at a couple things with this Cleveland situation. As you point out, Class A, now the second Cleveland Guardians pitcher who has been placed on leave pending the result of an investigation into allegations related to sports betting. Obviously, there's been no finding yet, but this is now two pitchers from the same team. important in the release by the Cleveland Guardians that said no other personnel of the club are believed to be under investigation or under threat of being investigated. It appears that for now, that this Cleveland Guardians related investigation stops at Ortiz and Class A, but still, that's a very significant piece of information because Ortiz obviously was actually going to start a game at Wrigley the night before he was bullish, and then now with Class A, he's one of the best closers in the game. And so what I think we're going to find out here moving forward is what was the evidence, if there was evidence of any sort of wrongdoing? And again, the thing about Ortiz, and we don't have all the information yet about Alcantara, but with Ortiz, or with the Class A rather, but with Ortiz, the situation with Ortiz had to do with very suspicious activity on particular pitches that were prop bets. We don't know what the situation is with Class A right now, but that's certainly in the scope of getting all the information in that MLB can, they were then able to identify Class A as being someone else that they have to identify and potentially investigate more completely. The issue here going forward, guys, is this. There needs to be a redoubling of efforts on the part of education, and also these notions of prop bets and things that can be done with one keystroke of one app that you don't think necessarily involves you, but it involves, let's say it's a parlay, multiple different things, which is what was involved with Tucapita Marcano a year ago. Even if it's a bundle of bets, but if that bet touches the team that you play for, that is really the third rail of what sports betting is in terms of baseball, where if it impacts a game in which you have a duty to perform, that typically has been, if that's proven, that's what you're talking about with Tucapita Marcano, which was a lifetime permanent ban. I mean, this is a very, very serious offense. And the other point I'll make regarding the overall notion of sports betting, we have seen multiple stories now about players who have been hearing vile threats, very, very harsh and threatening language from fans about, hey, you cost me X amount of dollars because of this play that you didn't make. And again, that was just honest effort by players, but they're getting criticized by people who now have legal, the bets are legal, but the conduct is not okay. And I think that's where we're seeing now a lot of very, very slippery slopes right now in the sport. And I think information and integrity are going to have to be very, very important now going forward.
John Morosi, last thing, and we only have 30 seconds. Not going to hold you to it based on the outcome of this series, and we'll see what kind of moves they move in the deadline. But 30 seconds, gut check, answer. Who's better right now, the Brewers or the Cubs?
The Chicago Cubs. I had to think about it for a second, but the Chicago Cubs. And I do believe they're the better team now. Of course, a big weekend win for the Cubs cross town, and they are going to get better by a wider margin than the Brewers will at the deadline. So over the long term, I like the Cubs to win the National League Central.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks, JP.
John, you're the man. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
That is John Morosi. He's terrific. MLB Network insider. I love talking ball with him. It's a lot of fun.
Lawrence, Matthew Boyd, the all-star tonight, against Jacob Mizorowski, the all-star, who throws 102. His slider goes 96.
Cubs been ducking him.
That's what Matt Arnold said.
Been ducking him.
Tomorrow, the Colin Ray revenge game. Mm. Former Brewer Colin, I know.
Okay.
Against Cary Grove High School's own Quinn Priester, okay, who's been great of late.
And then?
Shota Imanaga coming off his worst start, maybe as a Cub, and certainly of the season, against Brewers all-star and ace Freddy Peralta. I mean, this is some stuff for the two teams tied for the National League Central lead and the best record in the National League.
We've got more baseball stuff to do before we get out of here. Ron Coomer is going to join us at 5:25. But when we come back, what's Montez up to and how does he fit in this new defense? We'll share next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Mark Potash.
Thanks for remembering me.
Well, we remember you, man.
They'll take the North guys, drop me like a hot potato as soon as I left, and I got a phone to pick with those guys. But Spiegel and Holmes show is on the good list.
Afternoons on The Score.
For Montez, we had a good conversation. I know he's disappointed in himself and wants to continue to get better. I know, and he knows he's capable of much more. Also, as we continue to build the defensive line, adding more talent on that will help. When we looked at some of the chip numbers and the double teams, he did get a fair share of those too. And the way that you defeat that is continue to add talent to create more one-on-one matchups.
Well, that took a little bit of a hit today with the news from Brad Biggs that Shamar Turner is going to be out a month or more after leaving Wednesday's practice with an ankle injury.
That'd be the second round defensive lineman for your Chicago Bears.
Who I love.
You do.
I'm a fan.
Not just because he punched a dude in the ding ding.
I mean, that helps. I mean, I like that he's got some nasty to him. It's funny because even though it's not necessarily the same position, I think that his stats in college are similar to Dayo Odingbo's, where it's like, man, there's a lot of potential, but not a lot of production. And so I'm hoping that both guys end up producing, but missing a month of training camp is not a great start. Not that it's his fault. It's just that it's one of those things that makes it difficult at a position where the Bears need to be better. They've got to affect the other team's offense more than what they've been doing the last couple of years.
So does Montez Sweat. And he has he had kind of a down year last year for a team that had a down year last year. But he's been very present and very active in the offseason by choice. So that is among the things he discussed with the media yesterday. And here's Montez Sweat on the new scheme and if he's ready to resume being the man.
It's a complex scheme. I think it keeps you on your toes, but it challenges us as a defense to hone in on our communication and just flourish in that way.
Then Jensen said you were particularly locked in during the offseason, perhaps kind of unhappy with the way last season went for you personally. Is that fair to say? Is that accurate? Can you expand on that a little bit?
I believe y'all asked me that question at OTAs. I think I already touched on it. Okay. Was you? Yeah, but I reiterated. It was just I feel like it was important for a new scheme, especially with a complex scheme like this, just to come in, learn the defense, and try to learn it once or twice, and again as the season goes along.
Do you feel like you're the guy that needs to lead the pass rush this season?
Sorry. What'd you say?
Do you feel like you're the guy that needs to kind of spearhead the pass rush this season?
I mean, it's a job. It's a collective job as a group. But, I mean, I guess if you say I'm the guy, yeah, I want to be the guy.
Ooh, a little bit of an edge there with Biggsy, huh?
Yeah.
A little bit.
I'd like to see some of that edge on the edge.
On the edge, where he plays. Yeah, he's got some work to do. Ben Johnson was pleased that he did come in the offseason, did come in for the OTAs, which he doesn't have to do, but he did, chose to, and for the reasons that he said. You know what I like? He watches film every offseason of some of the best DNs around the league to try and do some homework, and in the past he's watched T.J. Watt and Myles Garrett. You know who we watched this time? Cam Jordan. Lot of Cam Jordan.
Well, that would make sense because that's Dennis Allen's defense. So he's watching how Cam Jordan navigated that defense and goes, oh, maybe I can do some of that stuff.
Yep. He said Cam Jordan has always been one of those premier pass rushers in the league. Kind of hard not to watch him. I've gone back and looked at some of the film, how he's excelled in this defense under Dennis Allen. And even though they don't have identical builds, and I'm reading some of this from Scott Baer over at Marquee.
Yeah, Montez is long. Like Montez is what, 6'6"?
6'6", 262. Cam Jordan, 6'4", 287. Their size allows them both to generate push against the run in the pass. The quote from Montez, it's just all about creating those one-on-ones and doing what I need to do when it's called on to be done. So I like that he's looking at Cam and trying to learn from that.
Yeah, pick up wherever you can, like any sort of tip that you can pick up as you're trying to learn a new defense and how a new defense fits in. I'm here for it. But they've got to take a step forward with the pass rush. Now, look. They're going to be helped out. It's going to be accelerated because of the confusion that Dennis Allen causes on the way that he calls a game.
What if they were to add somebody really good? What if they were to add a superhero, Lawrence? What if they were able to add any superhero they wanted? Who would be the best one to add to the team? This is a question that Bears players were asked. I think it's one of those things at camp where they ask all the players.
Yeah, they put like a TikTok video together of this.
The Green Lantern?
I don't believe. We'll see if anybody does.
Kilowog would be great. Green Lantern Kilowog would be great on the Bears defensive line.
Here's a little more than a minute of Bears players discussing which superhero would be best to add to this team.
Which superhero would you add to the roster?
Flash.
Drop back and throw a deep.
Spot. We already go to Spider-Man.
Flash.
Superman.
Hulk. Hand the ball and run. Jump over some people.
It's got to be the Hulk to play O-line, right?
I'll go Superman. He's OP.
We already got one on our team. We don't need to add one. We got Spider-Man.
I'm an Iron Man fan, but he couldn't really help us out.
Spider-Man can do everything that we do.
I'm giving the ball to the Flash.
Unpopular opinion, Wolverine wouldn't be bad. Sturdy, heavy body. What people don't know about Wolverine, he's fast, agile. He ain't afraid to get physical, too.
Spider-Man, catching everything.
Batman, see it right here.
King T'Challa.
I would say Spider-Man, but that's already here.
Why would you have to do Superman? Like, who beat Superman?
Wait. So, what's your answer?
I would say Spider-Man, but we have that already.
I kind of got to go Flash.
Because who guarded Flash?
Superman.
Superman's not guarding Flash.
Man, he putting hands on that boy at the line.
He got to catch him off the line, though.
Incredible Hulk in the trenches.
Boy taking Hulk. Triple team.
Hulk pass! Hulk.
Wolverine.
Feel bad in that because he's my superhero.
It's like Batman.
We had the Hulk. We stopping everything.
I got to answer the question. I got to answer the question. Come on, you know today.
All right. I feel like Batman is the worst answer possible. He's just a dude.
He's just a guy.
He's just a guy.
He's a strong guy.
Strong guy.
But
smart.
But they literally already have guys that have the physical makeup of Batman.
Okay, all right, cool.
On their team.
Double checking on that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Spider-Man, but they have one already because that's Kyler. You know,
yeah, and that's why you kept getting the in the middle of that because they were just going to clips of Kyler. Yeah,
and then a lot of the Flash. I mean, Tyreek Hill's success makes that make a lot of sense.
A lot of Wolverine, and I'm glad to see guys doing that.
Tell people why.
Well, Wolverine is really strong. He is slight. He in the canon, like Hugh Jackman is actually a foot taller than Wolverine actually is.
That guy's got a huge Ackman as well.
He does.
It's enormous.
That's why they call him that. So he's 5'3", but he's thick and he's indestructible. We're probably not going to let him use his claws because it's the NFL.
Probably.
But we
got to get those claws trimmed before every game.
We never have to worry about him not recovering from an injury because that's his mutant superpower, is that he always heals.
What a gift that would be.
No matter what. So if you wanted to go, you probably don't want to put Deadpool has a similar power, but you don't probably don't want to put Deadpool on the team because he's going to make things awkward in your locker room. But Wolverine's got an edge to him.
Right.
He's kind of mean. Now, he is Canadian. Mm. So they're, you know, but the Bears have done well with Canadian-born players.
That's right.
Israel Adonijay.
And who's the dealer? Akeem Hicks.
Yeah. So there you go.
So, all right, it's pretty good. So a lot of people going Hulk in there. I mean, that makes all the sense in the world.
It does. I do fear that he might be drawn offside very easily.
That's why my response is always to go with the Thing. Instead of the Hulk.
That's a good call.
The Thing, you know, the head slap. When the Thing gives you the head slap as a pass rusher, I mean, no lineman can frankly even survive that. So, but maybe it could be the Thing on one edge as a tackle and the Hulk as the other tackle. If those were your bookend tackles. But controlling the Hulk is a difficult thing.
That's probably why you want him as a defensive lineman, but there's going to be a 3rd and 5 There's going to be a third and five where the Hulk is just going to – he's going to be fired up. Someone's going to say something. He's going to jump across, and it's going to be a whole new set of downs.
Yeah.
And then he's going to get mad at himself, and he's probably going to get flagged for something. Like, it's
problem is you calm him down, you're left with Bruce Banner.
Right.
And you're like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, and then you got to slap Bruce Banner and turn him back into the Hulk. Like, it's not good. The Flash as a wide receiver obviously makes a lot of sense.
And that was Caleb at the beginning. No surprise he wanted the Flash.
I would offer up Wonder Woman as a wide receiving candidate. She is tough as nails. She gonna run through you.
What kind of league is this?
If we're doing superheroes, like,
she's gonna run through you. And you know what? Everybody could fly home on the see-through plane. The team plane would be...
Well, that's really only for two people.
Just for her and Caleb? Or whoever she wants.
Whoever gets the ride home. Mm. Because Wonder Woman is listed as like 6'2", 175.
Slot receiver right there.
Yep.
That is a good slot
and
size.
And strong as all hell.
So as a kid, I remember thinking... Why would anyone choose the Flash over Superman? Superman is as fast as the Flash.
No, he is not.
He's not?
It's not even close.
Really?
Yes.
But I thought Superman was as fast as anybody.
No, he is not.
How is that not possible?
Because the Flash is tapped into the Speed Force, which is a lot faster. Like, there's plenty...
I'm asking the wrong guy.
There's plenty of canon of this, too, where it's like... The Flash and Superman are going to have a race for charity.
Hmm.
And the joke is always that the Flash allows for the race to be close.
Thor as a quarterback or Thor in general? Some people are asking.
I mean, sure, you put a Norse god up there, that tends to work. We might have to we have to make some rules on and whether or not gods and goddesses can be on the team, but fair enough. Like, that's a good choice.
Yeah, there's some that just don't make any sense at all. Batman makes no sense at all.
I would offer Captain America as your running back or wide receiver. Could be a good choice. Or as your quarterback.
Yeah. Who's the one with the arch? Is the archer the one who shoots
Hawkeye? He's just a guy.
Yeah.
He's just a guy.
So no Hawkeye.
Now, if you wanted to put Hawkeye in the PGA, I'm here for it.
Okay.
As he has said in movies... I went and played golf. I played 18, and I shot 18. So
there you go.
So if you wanted to get him into the PGA, sure.
Juggernaut. A lot of textures suggesting Juggernaut as halfback.
Another issue of control
here. Bad guy.
Yeah, that's a bad locker room guy. Great player. Bad locker room
guy. Would you consider drafting him number 9 overall? Like one of the top prospects overall.
I absolutely would draft him number 9 if I had the opportunity to do so. But yes.
All right. See, I'm glad we did this.
Yep. I did a whole thing on this, right?
Ben, there's a super dog. Who came up with a super dog?
I did not know you did a whole thing. A whole team?
15 years ago. I made Team Marvel and Team DC.
Oh, okay.
It was on the Scores website.
Yeah. Oh, was it really?
I did the whole thing from ownership down.
Oh, you did? So this has all been fleshed out.
A little bit. So it's a long time ago.
Who's on the coaching staff?
Oh, I think I had Maxwell Lord as the GM of Team DC. I had Tony Stark owning Team Marvel.
Oh, that's good.
And I think Nick Fury was the GM.
Yeah, Tony Stark.
Team Marvel.
Tony Stark is an owner, man. Those locker rooms would be elite.
And Bruce Wayne as Team DC's owner.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go.
So
then you've got Batman if you really needed him.
Yeah, because he's
which
got,
you don't.
Because he's got money.
Mm-hmm.
Batman's biggest power is the writer's pen. Take that, studs.
I wonder if Batman would sign Michael Parsons, even after, perhaps after the fans. You see the fans chanting, pay Micah at Cowboys camp?
Yeah, that's a whole thing.
While Jerry's walking around there.
It's a whole thing got going on.
As it should be.
It's bad. When we come back, we will stop talking about superheroes in football, though. Hey, man, I could do this all day.
I know, and I brought it up.
If you're the White Sox, how should you feel about this weekend, Speaks? I want you to think about that and then share your thoughts with the world next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa.
Okay.
See, we're full service, 670 The Score station.
Afternoons on The Score.
Shaw waits for the 1-0. Here it comes.
Low and outside. Snap throw to first, and now they've got Nico hung up in a rundown between first and second. Sosa chasing Horner to first. Haps coming in to score. Now the throw comes home, and Haps caught in a rundown between third and home. And the ball is loose. Everyone's safe.
Haps going to get home. Yeah, this is interference by Montgomery. Nico's going to move up a base, I believe. And because of the rundown and confusion with the White Sox, the interference call, and
so the catcher, Caro, was chasing Hap back to third. He attempted to toss the ball to Montgomery, who was standing right in the baseline as Hap was trying to get back to third base. There was a collision, ball was loose, and they call obstruction on the third baseman, Montgomery.
Highlight courtesy of The Score, Zach Zabeman and Ron Coomer on the call. Coom will join us in about 30 minutes, and we will talk Cubs and Cubs and Brewers with him.
So on that play, Edgar Caro held the ball an awful long time, chasing Ian Happ back up the third base line. But Colson Montgomery, who is not a very experienced third baseman, was frozen and standing there in the baseline a little too close instead of moving back to provide some space. And Ian, the base runner owns the baseline, because if he goes outside it, he's outside the baseline and gets called for that. So Ian Happ has every right to barrel into and through Colson Montgomery the way that he did. Lawrence.
He dropped a shoulder.
He really did. Totally allowable. My question is, why did Colson Montgomery play 50 games at Charlotte at shortstop and just 4 at third base? But now in the majors, he's played 10 games at shortstop and 9 at third base.
I've been trying to figure that out with Vargas, too. Like, why do they feel the need to play him at first when you should probably be playing him at third?
I think because they want to get Mydroth and Sosa, get their bats in. It feels like a lot of work being done to get Lenin Sosa at bats,
who was a big part of that situation again. And like, talk about the idea of maybe the Cubs were scouting the White Sox roster, right, and be like, that's a guy that can be had.
But his bat's been pretty good. His bat has had its moments.
I don't know if there's a reason to not. I don't know if you should be not using players where they're supposed to be played because of Lenin Sosa.
I think that's the point.
He's the guy that should move, not guys that seemingly have positions.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I hope it's not a disconnect between Chris Getz and a development plan and Sergio Santos at AAA and now with Will Venable at the big leagues. I hope it's not a disconnect. It's something to check in on. Because it's weird.
It's a very strange thing.
Because Mydroth long-term is a shortstop in all probability. And Colson, Mydroth long-term is a second baseman. Excuse me. And Colson, hopefully, long-term is a shortstop.
So, and I wouldn't waste Vargas at first if he can actually play third. Because that's a position where you would put someone who maybe, like one of your catchers, for example.
Well, I'll give you another one. I think there should be a third catcher on this roster because Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro both should be getting big league at-bats.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if make a choice on which one of those guys needs to start developing as a first baseman,
sure,
and play them at first, put Vargas at third, put Montgomery at shortstop, put Mydroth at second base. And then Lenin, we can figure out places to put him when guys need days off.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And without the third catcher on the roster, they don't want to use Caro and Teal at the same time, because they don't want to end up with nobody else. So I think your roster's better off having that third catcher than it is somebody else.
I would suggest to Lenin that he pick up a catcher's mitt, too, just in case.
You never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
You might have to activate that thing.
So that play is odd and brings up the conversation. But you asked before the break, how should the White Sox feel? They dominated the game on Friday night.
Friday night felt real good if you're the White Sox.
Yesterday, their sloppiness in the field and on the bases exposed them, and the Cubs took a tight game, what ended up being a tight game.
And Saturday, their pitching kind of let them down. So I mean, Friday felt good. You know, you had a packed ballpark. You had 40,000 people there at the ballpark. Everyone seemed to be having a good time. It's one of the things I want to talk with Coom about, because he was kind of talking about that on the broadcast over the last couple of days. I think there was it yesterday that there was a foul ball that went through a Cubs and a Sox fan who had hugged?
I think that was 2 days ago.
Okay.
Because there was also...
Made me laugh.
There was also a foul ball that hit Len Casper's computer.
Oh, can't have that.
Yeah, and Len just totally took a dive. Just totally went under the console. But he was getting crap from Coom and from DJ.
Well, look, Len is the first guy that I've seen that does his scoring on a tablet.
Boog does too. There's a lot of people that do. Controversial issue.
It is.
On the PBP Voices of Baseball.
It is. It's a thing?
It's very much a thing.
All right. We can talk with Coom about that a little bit later on in the show. But next up, Chris Emma. And I think he's here, right? Yeah, because I saw him walking the hallways.
Oh, good.
Chris Emma is going to be here, and Chris Emma has got your Bears hit. One word. We'll find out what he thinks about Shamar Turner. We'll find out what he thinks about the clunkiness of the Bears offense, which was supposedly a little bit better. Today, we'll run through all of that with Emma next here on The Score.